Several things noteworthy, in addition to the fact that we're having this workshop, today is World Water Day. So this is a good time for us to be spending our energies thinking about water and water quality on World Water Day, something to really celebrate. The other thing that is new to the state of California, although not new to us, is the public participation and outreach protocol that started at January the 1st of this year, known as AB 2108. After we get started, I'm going to ask our executive officer to give a brief description of what that is. Not new to us in practice, but new to the state of California. So at this point, we'll ask the clerk to call the roll so we can declare a quorum.
Mr. Barbanel? I know he's here. I saw him. Mr. Anderson?
Here.
Ms. Blair?
Here.
Dr. Olson?
Here.
Mr. Strawn?
Here.
And Ms. Warren? Does not appear to be here. And Chair Cantu?
She is not here. I'm sorry.
And Chair Cantu?
Here. We have a quorum. Thank you very much for participating in this meeting this afternoon. Before we actually get started with the protocols and how you do everything for our public participants, I'm going to read a statement on how to participate. This workshop is done exclusively via the web, so we can't just start talking. We have to go through some protocols. And they are as follows. I would like to share some instructions on how to participate in today's virtual board meeting. If you wish to make a verbal comment during the public forum or during one of the board agenda items, you must be signed into the Zoom webinar or be participating via your phone. Information on how to participate can be found at the San Diego Water Board meeting agenda website. Public comments will be accepted for each item after all presentations for each item are complete. We have one item today. If you wish to speak on an item, please virtually raise your hand. If you're using a computer or a tablet, please raise your hand button in the Zoom. I think we're all familiar with that little hand button. If you're calling into Zoom, please dial *9, which is the same as raising your hand. Please use the raise hand feature to let the board know that you wish to speak, even if you have previously registered and indicated that you wish to speak. If you do not raise your hand, we will assume you no longer wish to speak. When public comment starts on an item, the commenter order will be determined by the order each person raises their hand. I will call on each commenter by name, or if you're on the phone, we will call out the last three digits of your phone number, and then you will be unmuted, during which time you would be able to speak. Please note that you will not appear by video during your testimony. There is a 3-minute time limit for each public commenter. However, that time could be extended at the chair's discretion. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen for those calling in by phone. If you run the timer, and we will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left and your time will be up. We would like to remind you, everyone participating in the board meeting today, to state your name for the record before you speak, and please unmute your microphone if you are not speaking. Excuse me, please mute your microphone when you are not speaking. If you experience any technical difficulties, please call or text to area code 805. Now, is AGP working on this today?
They are not. This is okay. Just us.
So if you're having technical difficulties, God be with you. I don't think there is any additional support. Okay, with that having been accomplished, this is a public workshop. We will not be taking any action today, but we will be hearing testimony. And I'll invite our executive officer, Dave Gibson, to give us an overview of AB 2108.
Thank you, Chair Cantu, members of the board.
Before we go to that, I wanted to check to see, do we have any public forum comments on items not on today's agenda? Chris, do we have anyone indicating that they wish to address the board on other matters besides what we're gathered here for today?
I do not see any hands.
Okay. In the event that there's a technical difficulty, please let us know about that later. We can always come back to that public forum item. Thank you, Chair Cantu. As you indicated, the San Diego Water Board has long considered outreach an important part of communication and transparency. And since 2012, when Henry Abarbanel asked us to begin meeting with elected officials, non-governmental organizations, community groups, and others, we've engaged with communities throughout our region on a semi-annual basis. So the advent of Assembly Bill 2108 did not come as a surprise or a culture shock to us. I'm happy to say I think we can rise to this challenge. The purpose of the law, in short, is to require the boards to engage in community outreach to promote meaningful engagement from potentially impacted communities, especially disadvantaged or underserved communities, on actions that the board is contemplating that may affect those communities. Our practical vision outreach has always included this. In this case, this is a specific pending matter the board may take up in May of this year. If not then in June. As an outcome of this listening session, we'll take notes of the comments we received today. There's an official public comment period that's also open at this time, and the board will make specific findings pursuant to AB 2108. And from what we've learned and listened to today, for your consideration with a tentative order in May. That is the short of it. I'll invite the attorneys if they wish to clarify anything that I've glossed over, but we're here to listen today on this shipyards matter, gather information pursuant to AB 2108 and make specific findings from this proceeding and from that statute for your consideration in May.
Thank you, Dave Gibson. So this is the time and place we're going to hear Tentative Order Region 9, 2023-0012, MPDS Permit CAGO 39001, General Waste Discharge Requirements for Discharges from Shipyards to the San Diego Bay. The San Diego Water Board will not take any formal action on this item. So I'll turn it over to our staff member, Debbie Fawn, at this point to start our presentation. Thank you, Ms. Fawn.
Thank you for introducing me. Give me a minute while I share my screen. Can everyone see the presentation?
Yes.
Okay, I see nodding heads. Hi, everyone. I'm Debbie Fan, and I'm here to introduce the general MPDS permit for discharges from shipyards to San Diego Bay. For today's presentation, we'll go over the gist of what exactly is an MPDS permit and why shipyards are required to enroll under them. This includes their operation along with what is required from this general permit. Lastly, we'll go over reasons on how this permit impacts San Diego Bay and opportunities for you to provide comments. Following my presentation, a few of the shipyards are here to introduce themselves. And of course, at the end, we'll be available for questions. The permit that we are presenting is a general MPDS permit. MPDS stands for National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. I know, the acronym isn't very intuitive, but we'll be using it a lot. The MPDS program addresses pollution by regulating point sources that discharge pollutants to water the U.S., and this includes river, lakes, and bays. The best example to demonstrate a point source is a pipe that releases wastewater. MPDS permits are often split into two categories, an individual MPDS permit and a general MPDS permit. Individual permits are issued directly to a single entity, but for today, we'll be focusing on a general MPDS permit, which allows multiple entities that have similar operations to be regulated under the same permit. And this is where we, as the San Diego Water Board, comes in. The MPDS program is a federal program under the Clean Water Act that grants the San Diego Water Board, us, the authority to regulate this program. The mission for the San Diego Water Board is to protect the waters within our jurisdictions, which includes most of San Diego County and portions of South Orange County and Riverside County. The objective of this permit is to regulate three shipyards that are located along San Diego Bay, as shown here. Continental Maritime of San Diego, BAE Systems San Diego Ship Repair Incorporated, and General Dynamic National Steel and Shipbuilding Company, also known as NASCOs, Our all shipyards are located adjacent to San Diego Bay and are each currently regulated by an individual MPDS permit. These individual permits have similar requirements because of their common operation and close proximity to one another. Rather than requiring each shipyard in San Diego Bay to apply for a separate MPDS permit, the general permit establishes a streamlined and consistent process for regulating shipyards in San Diego Bay. This also better prepares us for new shipyards that want coverage under an MPDS permit, such as also USA that is preparing to transition from a boatyard to a shipyard. A shipyard has various operations around our site, including metal fabrication, painting, mechanical work, and other activities required to construct, modify, and maintain naval and other marine vessels. These activities have the potential to introduce pollutants such as copper, zinc, and oil and grease to San Diego Bay when it rains, to which pollutants can transport via runoff. To prevent the release of these pollutants, the general permit prohibits the discharge of the first inch of rainfall from maintenance and repair areas and other industrial locations unless the stormwater is treated to levels where it complies with the permit's toxicity requirement that demonstrate that the water is not toxic to aquatic life. This has incentivized shipyards to retain as much stormwater as possible, as shown by these holding tanks at BAE, which routes stormwaters to the City of San Diego sewer system, where it can be treated rather than go directly to San Diego Bay. In addition, the general permit also incorporates statewide regulation of industrial stormwater, which require each shipyard to maintain and implement a stormwater pollution prevention plan designed to reduce or prevent the discharge of pollutants. This includes covering fueling area, using dry cleanup method rather than hosing down an area, and training staff on spill responses. For stormwater that does get released to San Diego Bay, shipyards are required to monitor for common pollutants, which mainly include metals, to determine how effective their stormwater pollution prevention plan is. Some shipyards are equipped with floating dry docks, graving docks, or building ways, which are used for repair and maintenance activities that cannot be conducted when a vessel is waterborne. A floating dry dock is a large platform with a U-shaped cross-section that uses integral ballast water to submerge, as shown in this video here provided by BAE. As you can see, the floating dry dock submerges to allow a ship to maneuver in. Once the ship is in, the floating dry dock rises to allow the ship to be worked on. Graving docks and building ways are different in that they are structures that are often built into the ground and are often used to construct new marine vessels in addition to being used for repair and maintenance. The photo on the bottom right is a graving dock at NASCO that has blocks in place for a ship to lay on. Once the repair and maintenance activities are completed on these structures, the shipyard is required to prevent and minimize the discharge of pollutants by implementing cleanup measures, which include sweeping and pressure washing prior to flooding their structures. In addition, shipyards are required to sample deep flooding water from graving docks and building ways to ensure that additional metals and pollutants are not added to San Diego Bay. To further remove pollutant, NASCO has an ion exchange treatment system that treats hydrostatic relief water and deflooding water from building ways prior to discharging to San Diego Bay. An ion exchange treatment system is made out of multimedia filter vessels to remove solids, granular activated carbon to remove petroleum-based materials, and ion exchange media vessels to remove metals. Water that comes from this treatment system are also required to sample for metals and pollutants to ensure that the discharge will not add pollutants to San Diego Bay. The objective of this permit is to protect the various beneficial uses that San Diego Bay has to offer, and we do this by requiring the shipyards to adhere to water quality standards, discharge prohibition, and monitoring requirements. The San Diego Water Board does not anticipate that the issuance of this general permit will result in negative impacts to San Diego Bay. However, this is where we want to hear from you to make sure that we are considering the impacts of these shipyards to nearby communities. These shipyards have been regulated by an MPDS permit as early as 1987 and have been regularly inspected by us almost every other year. These are essential operations that are regulated by various agencies, and we want to make sure that we are doing our job to protect San Diego Bay and the community that it affects. Right now, we're in the middle of the public comment period where we are accepting written comments until April 7th. This is where anyone has an opportunity to let us know their concerns regarding the permit, to which we will formally provide a response to prior to presenting this permit at a board meeting. We hope to bring this permit to our May 10th board meeting, to which is another opportunity to comment. If adopted, this permit will be effective starting September 1st, to which we will begin accepting applications from shipyards. Once applications are received, then we will draft a notice of applicability letter that grants the shipyard enrollment under this general permit. This draft enrollment letter will also be posted for a 30-day comment period and is another opportunity to provide comments or ask questions. That brings us to the conclusion of my presentation. Again, the public comment period is open until April 7th, where people may submit written comments to sandiego@waterboards.ca.gov. My email is also listed if you have any questions. And now we have a few of the shipyards that are here to present themselves. Should we go in alphabetical order?
Sure. Thank you, Ms. Fawn.
Okay, let's start with Austell then. Austell is a boatyard currently, and they're transitioning to a shipyard.
Yeah, so this is Hugo with Austell USA here in National City. Thanks for allowing me to present our shipyard here. So we are a small shipyard at the foot of the National City, the Navy base here in San Diego. We moved into this area here, I think it was January of 22. And we're a site-specific MSRA, of course, for the government, in other words, a contractor. The location that we're in right now is the former MGBW site, but we've been here again roughly about a year. We are going to transition into a shipyard MPDS permit here soon, and we are happy to be part of the community and, of course, support the tentative order as well. Some of the work that we do here, it's pretty straightforward. We do topside work, test, maintenance, and repair for LCS, EPS, cutters, and of course, autonomous vessels. But the future for us here is going to be a new floating dry dock, of course, similar to what the other shipyards have. And that'll be doing some, hot work and those sort of things as well for our customer here. One of the things that we do have in place is we do have standing BMPs that we implement here. We have a zero discharge policy to support our current MPDS permit and, of course, future enrollment into the tentative order. We do have, of course, a SWIP to help implement those BMPs. And currently, we do have a stormwater capture system as well. All the water that collects within our industrial facility is captured and, of course, diverted to the sewer system. We do have BMPs, of course, training for folks. Anybody that's involved in the stormwater management and monitoring, they all get trained in BMPs. And of course, one of the things that I wanted to point out too is that most of the industrial activities that we do are actually done under a rooftop. We do have a 63,000 square foot operations building hangar where most of those operations actually occur, except for the things that have to happen, of course, at pier site. And one of the things also that we're doing here is we are redeveloping the site here as well, which means that we're going to be redoing the industrial area. What that means also is we're going to be, of course, including additional stormwater capacity. And one of the other examples of some of the things that we're doing here is just something as simple as our new parking that's going to have, of course, solar lighting, but more importantly for this group is it's going to have its own stormwater treatment system from the parking lot itself. Just in a nutshell, that's pretty much kind of what Austell is. If there are any questions later on, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Hugo. How about we go to BAE next? Lydia, do you want me to share your presentation or do you want to share it? I can't hear you.
Hi. No, I'll share it. No problem. Okay. Let me throw that up there. Let me know if you can see it.
We can see it.
Okay. And it's in presentation view because it's on two of
Yeah, you're good.
All right. So my name is Lydia Payser, and I am the environmental manager here at BAE Systems, and I do manage all aspects of environmental. And one huge portion is obviously working so close to our beautiful bay. Just first, you can kind of see from above, this is our site. You can see we have two dry docks in our facility. The one to the right there is our Pride of California dry dock, and it's actually all electric. It kind of stays right where it's at. It goes, it has the sump directly under it. The cranes as well are electric. We do have some emergency generators in the wing wall in case anything were to happen during an evolution of bringing a ship in, of course. But overall, it came in 2017 and is working very well in our shipyard. And then to the left, you can see only just the corner of it. We actually have a dry dock in a dry dock in that picture, which is kind of funny. But we had the Arco dry dock from the sub base getting redone at that point in our yard. And that's our Pride of San Diego. And it's from the 80s. I'm going to move on to the... Sorry, I have like three screens open. So there we go. So we roughly employ around 1,200 workers throughout the year. We maintain and modernize and repair Navy fleet vessels. So we do not build vessels, but we do quite a bit of repair. That's our main goal. We have 16 acres of land and 20 acres of water, which is leased from the Port of San Diego. We currently have three working piers and those two floating dry docks. The San Diego Ship Repair maintains fully equipped shops and facilities to support ship repair operations. Our sustainability vision and mission is something that we live by, is that BAE is committed to taking proactive measures to reduce the environmental impact of our operations and helping our customers and suppliers do the same. We strive to be an industry leader in environmental stewardship. And I wanted to show a few examples of things that we've done to do that. And I know she shared some of our tank systems, but just a little more information about our tank system. It's been around for quite some time, and it does give us the ability to collect over an inch of rainwater. We are allowed to discharge the first quarter inch during a rain event, so it does allow even additional capacity for some of these crazy atmospheric rivers we've been seeing lately. Amongst those, we have 10 different basins throughout our facility. So throughout the facility, you'll see tank systems such as these. So we have about 10. It's stored temporarily, and then we drain it to the sewer once you get past that quarter inch. Every time that there's an over 50% chance of rain, we hold facility and environmental team meetings that detail the storm forecast, and we plan appropriately as a team to ensure, you know, we're not technically not a 24/7 facility, but we do have tank cleaners that can be on site and facility team members and environmental team members that will come in on the nights where we expect large amount of rain, just to ensure that, for example, our sumps on the dry docks don't get overwhelmed. So sometimes we'll set up extra pump systems just to make sure that if it were to get close to overflowing, that we can just turn those on and keep that water contained. And that's been a newer thing with all this crazy weather we've been seeing, that we really have to keep an eye on that. I wanted to go over containment. Obviously, you guys probably see a lot of the white plastic that encases a lot of what we do for very good reason. When you're doing abrasive blasting or painting or welding, all of those can create different fugitive emissions that we certainly don't want in the environment. So one effort our team makes is to ensure that when these are built and prior to anybody doing work in these spaces, we conduct and document the fact that the containment is fully intact, and we'll have them walk with us. We'll say, fix this, fix that, make sure that everything's good to go before they start. During that process, sometimes you will get things that get trapped under the plastic. And so even before they tear it down, they have to call us out to do a final inspection prior to tear down, just to ensure that nothing gets blown out into the wind or makes it to the water. Oops. Some of the other efforts that we've made, we have quarterly, we have shoreline cleanups. There is a small section of our yard that's accessible by foot, that it's basically riprap. And so we do clean up all the trash that does kind of float in and sit in the rocks there. We clean that up quarterly. We just literally this week, I'm so excited, got these jellyfish bots. It's a French company that makes these trash skimming robots. You can actually attach a little bag to the back of it. You can see it there in the picture, and they're like a Roomba. You can just set them up into different coordinates of the yard, and it'll just go throughout the facility and collect trash. So that's a new thing that we'll be starting this next month. We have two of those. And then upper management made a really great culture change in our yard over the past few years, where at the end of the workday, all the white, we call them white hats, but they're like basically the people in charge in our yard. They go out with a bucket and a trash grabber at the last 15 minutes of every work shift, and they start cleaning the yard. And they encourage all the other crafts to come and join them. And it's made an enormous difference in the cleanliness of our yard, which really helps protect the bay. So it's really nice to see that change. You know, you can always tell people to keep things clean, but when you see your owner, your general manager of the shipyard walking out there with a trash bucket, it really makes a big difference. And then annually we do participate in Operation Clean Sweep and the Creek to Bay. Hopefully this year, if anyone of you want to see that jellyfish bot, we're going to be at the Cesar Chavez Park doing the cleanup. And our plan is to hopefully let people try it out if they're interested. So, and then a few of our other programs we have just to help protect the wildlife that we have is whenever an injured bird does land in our yard, we do proactively go out and we'll try and capture it. And we take it to Project Wildlife, which is one of the programs that we do support financially, as well as the local bee swarms. Surprisingly, we do get more than I would ever imagine landing in our shipyard. We think that maybe they come from Coronado and just need to take a break. But unfortunately, being in a busy shipyard, you can't have bee swarms resting in any high traffic areas. So we do have a local beekeeper called that we call out, and he has committed to responding quickly and will come and take those bee swarms to a sanctuary out in the East County. And then we also have a trap, neuter, release program, lots of cats down in the shipyard area. And so it helps to control the population if you go and get them fixed and bring them back. And they have other great purposes throughout the yard that we certainly don't not want them here, but we try and control the population that way. So those are the other programs that we do. And that is it. If anybody has questions, it sounds like that'll be later in the discussion. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll take our questions all together at the end of the presentations. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Debbie, Fawn.
Thank you, Lydia. Mm-hmm. Next up, we have Continental. I was told Trevor was going to speak. Lydia, can you stop sharing your screen?
Yes, sorry. I have three screens up. I'm trying get back to the... I just saw it flash up.
Maybe there. Chris can also help out.
There it is. Okay, stop. Share. Oh no, it's just saying to share. Do I just close it? Oh, I see it. Stop share. It came up.
Do we have anyone from Continental? Let me see the list of attendees.
We do have a question in the chat.
Oh, okay.
Let's hold off on the question until the end.
Okay. I see April in the attendees list. Let's come back to April. Sarah, are you okay going next?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay. Sarah's from NASCO.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and share a screen here. Please let me know if you can see it.
Yep, I can see it. Presentation mode.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you for having us here and being able to present. And Debbie, you know, I commend your presentation there. It's really difficult, I think, if you've never been in a shipyard before to know what to expect or what to see out here. So I think the pictures are very helpful. I'll try not to be too redundant on what the prior two speakers covered, but I do want to introduce you to our operations here at NASCO. So NASCO is a little bit different from the other two yards that we heard about today in that we're a full service shipyard. This is an aerial view of us. You can see just like the other two that presented today, we do have a floating dry dock that's there out there in the water. You can see the blue and green structure. But in the foreground, you also can see that we have some ships under construction. What's kind of different about our business model is we not only repair existing Navy ships, we also construct new ships, both for the government market and for commercial customers. So you can see here, these are examples of two types of ships that we build up from scratch here. We are literally the only new construction shipyard on the West Coast. So these are really important capabilities that we have here. Another part of our business model is just like the other shipyards, we also repair existing vessels. Some of those repairs can be done in our floating dry dock, or sometimes they can be staged here at berth for maintenance. In terms of discharge, I think, Debbie, you covered a lot of this. We talked about, and I think you showed a picture of our graving dock here, but typically our discharges are coming really from two main sources. One is deflooding of a dock following a ship launch. So this is another view of our graving dock, and you can see that what happens is we construct that ship in that basin, and then we flood the basin, and the ship will float out. At the conclusion of that evolution, we have to replace a gate that separates that basin from the bay and dewater it. These are very infrequent discharges. It happens maybe once or twice a year. And then the second source that we have is hydrostatic relief water. And so if you figure that these basins are below the water level, it's very similar to when you dig a hole at the beach. If you dig it deep enough, it's going to fill back in with water. And so what we have to do is take that water and keep it from refilling these basins. So you're essentially taking bay water that would otherwise come up into the basins. And we're running it through that ion exchange system that you showed pictures of, cleaning the water up and discharging it back to the bay. And that's more or less an everyday occurrence for us. Like the other facilities that we talked about today, we also capture and contain our stormwater. NASPO's made a number of tremendous strides on water quality over the last 25 years and done a lot of things to help improve the environment. One of the things we've done is we've looked strategically about what processes could we get rid of and not discharge anymore. And so if you look at our operations today compared to more than 25 years ago, there are about 20 fewer processes discharging than there has been historically. And of course, like the other folks today, we also have stood up some really aggressive best management practices that we use to prevent impacts from our activities to the environment for the bay. We have about 50 individual best management practices that we rely on, and these help us handle our materials and control our processes to prevent anything from going into the bay at all. Also work on good housekeeping, preventing spills. We train all of our employees. We have about 3,500 employees. We also use a program of frequent inspections and audits. We have a full-time staff here of five environmental engineers who go out regularly to make sure that employees and contractors are following all the work practices that they're supposed to be. We have on-site spill response at a fire department to respond if anything happens. As we said, we've eliminated and diverted a number of discharges and fully retain our stormwater at this point. We also made several operational and process changes, including one important one, which is a process substitution in the new construction of vessels. We have moved towards using a copper-free antifouling paint, which has been very helpful. We also implemented some really aggressive dock cleaning programs that happen before any launch event or submergence of the floating dry dock. That's just to make sure that just nothing gets carried over to the water when we have those activities. And then of course, the important part of that is we have a monitoring program to verify the effectiveness of all these measures. So that kind of in a nutshell outlines our programs. And with that, I will turn it back to you, Debbie.
Thank you, Sarah. I think some of the folks at Continental are having trouble connecting to their speakers, so while we try to figure that out, maybe do we want to go to the Q&A?
Yes, let's go ahead and let me know as soon as they're able to connect in. Do we have somebody helping them, Chris? Okay, somebody help them if necessary. In the meantime, Dr. Olson has a question.
Yes, yeah, some of these sort of apply to all of them, although I wrote them down for one particular group. And let me get my notes right. So I wanted to ask, so it says, how does water stay contained? I guess I don't exactly understand. So the water comes in during a storm event and you contain it, and then you can release a quarter inch. And what happens if you have a sustained rain event? Can you just keep releasing to the sewer, or is there a point that the amount of the wastewater treatment plant can take, or is that only during dry flow or occasional storms? Or is that an unclear question? I apologize.
No, I think it's clear. Do you mind if I answer that one, Debbie?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. At least in our case here at NASCO, you're correct. You cannot discharge stormwater at a level above what is specified by the city. So each shipyard will hold a separate permit from the city of San Diego that authorizes that discharge and will set flow limits that are appropriate. But in most cases, you have to retain it. In our case here, we retain it in our build positions, actually, because they can hold millions of gallons of water. And that allows us to slowly bleed the water back into the sewer system under the terms of the city's permit. Does that make sense?
Yes. Now, this year, we've had an unusual number of storms. I heard Orange County, we'd had 23 inches of rain, which is really tremendous. So how have your design systems been able to handle this large onslaught? It's good. It works fine. And
I'll answer that just from my site first, because I know it's very different than what Sarah does. So similarly, we do have permit limitations as to how quickly we can discharge that rainwater into the sewer. We do start off rain events allowing, you know, the first quarter inch to go directly to sewer. So all of our tank systems will be slightly cracked open, especially our pinch points that we're aware of, right? Like smaller tank systems. But ultimately, when you have these multiple day events, it's very challenging, and it can result, for example, this year on it was a MLK Junior Day. We had a huge amount of rain and multi-rain event, right? And so all of our tanks were full. They were overflowing at the top, and it was not safe for people to walk through the site at that point. So there has to come a point when you have to look at human health and safety. All of the Navy sailors live in our yard full time while they're here. So it's their living home, you know? So basically at that point, we will pick specific basins to open that will allow for safe transit. They never would ever all open, but we will have to drain, and it wouldn't be the tanks that get drained, right? It's just that flooding, that residual flooding. So all the worst stuff is in the tanks. And then at that point, we do have to occasionally, and it really, I've worked here 5 years, we've opened three times in all that period. So we have ways of managing it, and I feel like it's very effective.
Okay, and so when those releases are made, is anyone notified? I mean, are you just...
Yeah, my team will be there in the middle of the night if we have to, so that we can pull samples as required by the permit. We get them analyzed just like anything else. And if we do any exceedances, then yes, we will notify the water board of those exceedances.
So you monitor all of those and then report exceedances as they occur, if they occur.
Yes, absolutely. All right.
And then all the shipyards are required to report their monitoring results through quarterly reports.
Mm-hmm. This has brought up more questions for me. All this, I keep thinking I have a swimming pool that's going to overflow, but so far, not
same
yet.
Issue, different scale.
Okay, so I wanted to ask about your robot, your skimming robot, I think it's called.
The jellyfish?
The BAE, yes, the jellyfish. I unfortunately wrote down skimming robot. I should have written down jellyfish, much better name. But so what is the area it covers per hour?
So on the batteries that were provided, it can run for about 6 hours a day on one charge. It might be less than that if it's towing a lot of trash, right? So we might have to go out there and maybe empty it once a day to prolong the life. But ultimately you can set the area. It's a GPS satellite type machine where I can make the space as big as I need to. Now, of course, with Navy ships and security, et cetera, you know, going through our facility, we do have to keep it to smaller areas. But I will say trash builds up in small areas, right? We had considered using a C-Bin, which is an Australian company from what I recall, but they had kind of changed their business format to say they would only do it citywide, right? So our city or our port would have to fund a $1 million program for maintenance and upkeep to do the C-bins. So in lieu of that, we found this company. It's IADYS. It's IADYS is the name of the company. It's from France, and they developed this for shipyards in their country. So one of my coworkers found it online. I checked it out. They were here in the States and they demoed it for us, and we loved it. So it was the perfect fix for what we wanted. And so we bought two. They arrived yesterday and we're unpacking them and checking them out right now. So hopefully we'll have them in the water next week doing their job.
That's exciting.
Lydia, there
since
was
we're
one
on
more.
This topic at this yeah. moment, excuse okay. me, Dr. Olson, just for a moment. We have a question in the chat from Ms. Quigley, who wants to know a little bit more details about when your jellyfish is going to go to Cesar Chavez Park and how her organization could get involved. So if you just have a few lines that you can either write in the chat where she can see it, you can answer mm-hmm. her question. You guys can make that connection offline or in the chat rather.
Sounds good. It'll Thank be on you. Earth Day.
Dr. Olson.
The only other question I had was when you eliminate. So how do you eliminate discharges? I mean, don't you have to put the water, you treat it and then can you really eliminate a discharge? Or you eliminate it by putting it to the sewer? Maybe I just don't understand what eliminate
yes, means. In some cases, that's correct. We've moved it from a direct discharge to an indirect discharge. But for in other cases, it may be possible to go to closed loop cooling systems and things like that. So, but basically when we're talking about that, we're diverting them away from the bay. And as you probably understand, the direct discharge, is more sensitive than indirect discharge, right? So the tolerances for pollutant levels will be a little bit higher on the sewer side.
Yeah, because it's going to be treated. Yeah. And your monitoring, the normal monitoring that you do, how often is that done?
Well, as obviously as required by the permit, right?
Right.
But in some cases, like in our gravy dock, we may only discharge that once a year. So it means every time we discharge, we're going to be monitoring it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. I think you're doing a great job. Thank you.
Discharge from the ion exchange treatment system, which is where the water gets treated first mm-hmm. and then discharged to San Diego Bay, it will be monitored at least once a month.
Yes.
Because it's more frequent.
So the ion exchange, the brine goes to the sewer? Or
backwash water, yeah.
Goes to sewer, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Any additional questions from the board members for either National General Dynamics or BAE? I have some just general questions. When you were really confronted with, voluminous storm events this year that have been starkly uncharacteristic, I think we are up to 12 or 13 atmospheric river events. Is there a limit as to how much you can discharge into the wastewater sewer system treatment Did anybody anticipate these volumes, or do you have any kind of limit in terms of protection or overwhelming the wastewater sewer treatment plant in the cities?
Yes, I would say the discharge permits from the cities definitely appropriately. They are more concerned with hydraulic loading on the sewer. And so they're going to set up flow limits that you can't exceed there, especially during a rain event, right? So a lot of their strategy is to have you retain your significant flows until enough time has passed to alleviate that pressure on the sanitary sewer, right? And so we will have those flow limits set up in our permits. And I think all the shipyards probably have something a little bit different in regard to that, but it's would come from the city of San Diego. So I think that answers your question. If not, please let me know.
I think so. So I wanted to know, did those limits pose a problem or a challenge in these last back-to-back ARC events?
Not for us, because we're retaining in our graving dock, which, you know, has millions of gallons of capacity in there. And so we're able to essentially flood it. And Lydia's correct. It can be tremendously impactful to your production operations and to the people that work there. But that is part of our strategy. We intentionally flood. And then, of course, the city, you know, charges us by gallon to get rid of that into the sewer system. So it's not a small impact to our operations. It's definitely something we take seriously. And, you know, but I think we'll agree that it's a good practice and something that we plan to continue. So.
Lydia, do you have anything to add to that?
I will just say that, you know, we are given a very specific limitation and, you know, we know we can't go over that because of the lift stations, right? You have lift stations and they need to work properly. So those are unfortunately the times we've had to discharge, right? Is when we know that the sewer can't accommodate and our site is entirely flooded, that's our pinch point. And there's only two locations in our facility that really hit that point. It's really because we have people that live here and we need to accommodate their safe access through the yard. And we don't want to, you know, damage our offices and shops and incur facility damage as well. So there's those things to consider. And we never really ever want to discharge, which I think is clear. We make every effort having these meetings and hardening our system. Areas that we know had flooded in the past, we now have sandbags that we put out for every event. We clean out all the storm drains. I call them storm drains, right? But they all go to our tank system. But we nonetheless will get them all cleaned up and clean out the filter baskets and make sure that we don't have any issues getting the water into the tanks. We've even had issues in the past where just being at the bottom of a street, we were getting city water flowing into our site. So we've done a lot in the past few years. I want to say it was in 2018, we had 7 inches that came across Coronado and into our site. And that's when we really had to expand our tank system. We created a series of berms along the facility, took out some ramps that didn't make sense that were just flowing water from the public into our yard. So we've done a lot over the years just to really try and improve that system and just extra communication. And it's really helped. So we're working with the atmospheric river issue.
thank you, Dr. Olson. And then Gary Strawn, do you have a question? I saw your hand move, but I don't see your hand up. So you don't. Okay. Dr. Olson.
I just wanted to ask. So what they're saying now is with climate change, when we have these atmospheric rivers, we're likely to have more atmospheric rivers. And so how would your companies go about looking to how you might have to expand or alter your infrastructure to deal with more atmospheric rivers? I realize that this year was probably one of the worst you've seen, but since they say we're going to have more of them, I know in the Gulf Coast they're quite even worse than here. It's hard to believe, but So do you look forward like that? And how many years forward do you look? And I mean, you're a business, so you have to, you know, you can't just, so that's why I'm asking about it.
Yeah, I think it is something that everybody that's doing business just so close to the water is going to have to think about, correct? And so I know, you know, if you were looking at a lot of our facilities, it's a lot of production space that's outside. But of course, I probably shouldn't speak for everybody, but we are on port property, right? And so I think there's issues when you're developing on port property about planning for climate change and sea level rise. And, you know, so if you're doing new construction, do you have to raise structures up and things like that? It's definitely long-term thinking. And it is definitely, I think, on all of our minds and trying to navigate through that. But I don't think it's a problem just unique to shipyards per se.
No, it's not just to shipyards. I just wondered how you dealt with them since I'm not very familiar with shipyards.
So
what is your time horizon when you're, do you have another building stage envisioned, or is that beyond your 5-year business plan? Or I'm quite sure.
You know, it's probably a question for others in our organization in terms of that long-term
strategy.
I
apologize. Yeah. You sort of have your hands full dealing with here and now.
That's correct. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Also the NPDES general permit will be asking all the shipyards to create a climate change action plan for the future proofing.
Great. Thank you. I should know that, but we require a lot.
Any other questions from the board members for our two presenters?
I also see April's hand from the attendee. She's from Continental, and I think we've been trying to get her to voice in.
Great. Oh, great. If April's ready, we do have two questions from the participants, but we'll hold those until we've heard all presentations, if April's ready.
I know they're all in the same office. I see her in the panelist now. April, can you hear me? Or
I see several Aprils listed, and I'm going to allow all of them to talk, and hopefully one of those will work. So
it'll be a chorus.
Let's do that. All right, they're all allowed to talk. So April, are you there?
April, Trevor.
Trevor's another.
I think they're all under April's account. They told me they were having issues with their speakers.
Hi, this is Trevor.
Oh, okay, we hear you with an echo. Okay, let's find out where the echo. Okay, talk again.
Hi, this is Trevor, can you hear us?
Okay, perfect.
Hello, greetings. You can't say we didn't try and call in. I mean, how many numbers did we try and call in? The effort was there. So hi.
It was recognized.
Thank you. So hi, my name's Trevor Jones. I'm the Environmental Health Safety Security and Facilities Manager at Continental Maritime of San Diego. April is here with me. She's the Environmental Health and Safety Supervisor. I'm here to tell you a little about our company and what we're about. So Continental Maritime of San Diego is a 14-acre facility that's recognized as a master ship repair facility. Similar to what you've seen from a BAE system, we have a stormwater capture and conveyance system. We also operate as a zero discharge facility. Nothing that goes on in our facility ever goes into the bay. As an ISO 14001 certified facility, we take environmental very seriously. From day one, as an employee at Continental Maritime, the culture of the company is that everybody is an environmentalist. And we train our workforce in the first week of training to understand the impacts, our outputs, and aspects associated with each individual's job that could potentially have an adverse effect in the environment. So as that, one of the things we have done with our ISO 14001 program, and for anyone who's not familiar with that, it's the model program that companies follow to operate in an environmentally responsible manner. And we've aligned that program with the Stockholm Resilience Institute, which focuses on the 9 environmental boundaries that have been recognized that cause potential negative feedback cycles if we move past thresholds. So we focus on climate change, novel entities, ozone depletion, atmospheric aerosols, ocean acidification, biochemical flows, freshwater use, land system change, and biosphere integrity. And we look at our whole program holistically and try to understand and identify how we can not only prevent but reverse the impacts at a global level to try to prevent those negative feedback cycles from occurring. So none of that stuff is regulatorily driven, but we really do believe that we have a responsibility to make sure that we're not only not adversely affecting the environment, but we're doing what we can to make improvements on that. And I'm actually quite confident that both NASCO and BAE share those same philosophical principles. So as a working waterfront, we as a group work really hard to make sure that we are doing right by the community and right by the environment. And that kind of sums up what we're about. Able to take any questions if anybody has any.
Any questions from the board? Hearing none, I think we'll move to general questions from the audience, from the participants. I have two, and in the order that I've seen them, the first is from Henry Lee of Congressman Vargas's office. He has a question regarding the copper paint substitution. He would like to know how prevalent that use is, the substitute. And I don't know if he wrote that question. I don't know if he can ask it himself. But Henry, are you able to ask the question yourself?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah, great. So I see that Sarah from NASCO responded. But yeah, so she had mentioned product substitution as a method of protecting the bay. She specifically mentioned copper-free paint. And so I was just wondering if any of the other shipyards have similar practices that they use, maybe not necessarily through copper-free paint, but any other forms of product substitution. And then also for NASCO, other forms of product substitution you might use.
So for BAE Systems, typically the ships that we're working on are from the Navy. The Navy has certainly over the years changed some of the marine coating requirements for ships, but the way that it works is we bid on the work and the Navy indicates what type of paint that we do have to put on the ships. And that's for their own quality purposes. So that's not necessarily in BAE Systems control. I will say our dry docks are, especially the new one, I shouldn't say the old one because it's been in the water for quite some time. So I can't speak to the coating on that one, but the new one does have a copper-free coating that is safe for the environment. And that was at our request.
Yeah, and I think Lydia hits on a good point here. At the end of the day, all of the coatings that we use here, if you're going on a military ship, they have to meet the military specifications for that. And if a ship comes in with a copper-based antifouling on it, you typically cannot overcoat it with a non-copper-based antifouling. So typically that is used in new construction, which would be in our graving dock and our building waste. And even that had to be, it took several years to get clearance from the Navy to move forward on that. And obviously you can appreciate that a paint job on a ship is no small feat and it's quite expensive. So they're very sensitive to, you know, failure of those coatings. But also I think a lot of people aren't aware that the coatings on a ship are super important to the fuel efficiency. And so if you don't have the right type of coating on there, you can get drag on the ship and it will have poor fuel efficiency, which contributes to greenhouse gas emissions. So it's, you know, we as shipyards really do not get to choose the coatings that go on the ships. We can help the customer to understand, but at the end of the day, we have to do what they need done. So hopefully that helps.
No, it does. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that.
We would really like to be able to move 100% towards a copper-free effective paint that would make sure that we're not poisoning anything in the marine environment without accumulating the barnacles and the drag on the ship. Yes. So we look to science and technology to answer us there. We have two questions from Philip Musagas. Are you able to unmute yourself and ask your questions yourself, Mr. Musagas?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Yes, can you hear me okay?
We can.
Great. Okay, thanks. I will ask him directly. So the first question is for staff. I guess to Debbie, would be helpful if you could kind of go back to the basics of the permit and explain some of the differences between the individual permit requirements for the three shipyards that we're talking about today and what would be proposed or what is proposed in the general permit. I guess mm-hmm. in my experience, what often happens when you shift to individual permits to general permits is a relaxation or a kind of a lessening of some standards in terms of monitoring or reporting or effluent limitations. So I just would be helpful to understand what those differences might be. Thank you.
So all of the individual permits, they're all covered for industrial stormwater and they all had the same discharge prohibition of 1 inch. So we have retained that in the general permit. Of course, a lot of the shipyards retain more than that. As for the different kind of effluent limits, it depends on the operations present at all the shipyards. So basically, depending on if they have a floating dry dock, they'll have to follow the guidance and requirements for floating dry docks. If they have a building lay, they have those separate mm-hmm. requirements. And we were able to retain basically carry over all the requirements from the individual permits over to the general permits just because some of the operations were shipyard specific, such as NASCO only has the ion exchange treatment system and graving docks and building ways. So we were able to carry all of those requirements as they were in the individual permits to the general permit. Same with the floating dry docks, we were able to carry over all of those requirements over so that if there is a shipyard in the future that wants to enroll under this general permit, they will have to follow the same requirements that all the shipyards have done for their individual permits. I will say that one thing that was relaxed on is how frequently they have to report to the water board. Instead of submitting monthly monitoring reports, we changed it to quarterly just so that everything that they are monitoring in the past quarter will be submitted to us.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Debbie. So just so I make sure I understand, and I'll go through and review the permits and provide written mm-hmm. comments by the 7th. But you're basically saying that from the permittee's perspective, I guess, that the requirements that apply except for reporting and DMRs, the requirements that apply are virtually the same going from the individual to the general permits in terms of what applies to their particular facility?
Yes, even for the effluent limits, we follow anti-backsliding to which our effluent limits are not less stringent than what they were in the individual permits.
Okay, thank you.
And then just on that same point, so I'm Brandy Owen-Beals. I oversee the NPDES permitting program for the San Diego Water Board. And Debbie, perhaps you could also talk about the NOA procedures and let the folks attending the workshop understand how that process will work. I know you mentioned it during your presentation, but that might get at part of Philip's concern.
Yeah, so the way the general permit works is that it lists out different operations that are present on a shipyard, and depending on what kind of operations that a shipyard has, they'll request for those coverage. Once we review the application, we'll draft a notice of applicability saying, okay, this is what you have coverage for, and this is what you will have to comply with. And that draft enrollment letter will be posted for a 30-day comment period.
Okay, thank you. I wasn't sure. I thought I was muted already. I appreciate that. Thanks very much. Do you want me to ask my second question now, Madam Chair, or should I stand by?
Go ahead.
Okay. So I had a question on a different topic. I'm wondering, I guess this is kind of a two-part question. I guess first for the permittees, I just would like to get an understanding if there are materials or equipment or anything else that you use in the shipyards that contain or could discharge PFAS chemicals into the environment. If you have kind of protocols or practices to address that. And I guess the related question to the board is, would you anticipate requiring monitoring for those kinds of chemicals in the discharge, either discharge to the sewer system or the discharge, if there's a stormwater discharge directly or a wastewater discharge, monitoring for PFAS in those discharges. And I realize that there are not, I think at this stage, there are not final regulatory requirements from EPA for those, but they are certainly coming in the near future. And so just would like to understand maybe from the permittees and the board, how you anticipate kind of addressing that particular pollutant. And if it's not an issue for shipyards, then please, I'd love to be educated and understand that as well. So thank you.
Actually, I think everybody would like to know the general answer to how we're going to regulate PFAS.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Yes, I agree. I'll just say briefly, the presence of AFFF, it's an anti-film forming foam is still 100% stocked on every Navy ship. That is how they fight fires. They've looked, and I believe they have the ability to replace that now, according to some news that just recently came out. But whether they actually switch that out of the systems is up to the Navy. So it does occasionally end up in our yard. It is something that can discharge, and we are very careful with that. We collect it. We dispose of it as a hazardous waste. We don't mm-hmm. do any batch discharges to the sewer when it has AFFF. And we do test for it. We are required to report that as a tri-chemical mm-hmm. in July. So this will be my first year actually totaling that up. Again, all of that goes to a hazardous waste facility.
Okay. And just and I appreciate that very much. So just a follow-up question, besides AFFF, are there any other materials, again, or equipment or anything else that might have PFAS present in your operations?
Well, it's pretty pervasive in a lot of things. So we might have some popcorn bags and pizza boxes around the site that may contain PFAS. So I'm not going to say that we don't.
Okay.
I think that would be an extreme, but no, we do not use any product or chemical for firefighting reasons on our site that would contain that. And to my knowledge, nothing in high quantities that, you know, that we would be using on a daily basis here.
Okay, thank you.
I also just want to add
for all the shipyards. Sorry, that. That's
oh no, I understand. No, I appreciate that. Thank you, Lydia.
Also, want to add that for the general permit, we are adding PFAS monitoring and sediment, and we highly encourage all the shipyards to participate in a regional monitoring program to help analyze that data.
Okay, thanks, Debbie. The PFAS monitoring in sediment within mm-hmm. the shipyard boundaries. I'm sorry, just. Help to understand a bit more about that.
Yeah, the sediment monitoring would be near the shipyards.
Okay, all right, thank you.
I think if the shipyards participate in a regional monitoring program, it's possible that the individual sites that are part of the regional monitoring program may or may not be within the boundaries of the shipyard. That would need to be determined as part of the regional monitoring program. And if the shipyards understand that differently, I would just encourage them to jump in and correct my understanding.
Any comments, shipyards?
No, I think what she said is consistent with our understanding.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for participating, and you may lower your hand now.
Okay,
we'll do. I only say that because I can't keep track of too many hands.
Right, there we go.
Do we have any other questions from anybody else on this Zoom regarding this workshop? Does anybody see any hands up that I may be missing?
I think I just raised mine. This is Gary Strawn on the board.
Oh, good. Thank you.
And a real quick general one. Are we planning to do this for all the other shipyards, the boat yards, I guess they are? Or is this just, I mean, when we went through this years ago, I was amazed at how many smaller boat yards there are around Shelter Island and other places around the bay. Or is that a plan for a year or two down line?
Is the question? Oh, sorry.
Sure.
Chair Cantu, Board Member Strawn, thank you. Actually, it's the reverse. We're following the model that we use for the boatyards. We consolidated, I believe it was 18 boatyards in the region into a general order. And we're now consolidating the several large MPDS individual permits for shipyards into the same order. And to address the comment a few moments ago, the purpose of this is to economize a little bit on reporting requirements, but also on administrative tasks for our staff, so they can spend more time on reviewing reports and making sure that the monitoring, for example, is asking and answering the right questions, rather than relaxing any of the effluent limitations or other requirements for source control from them. You're quite right that the boatyards approach was very successful, and indeed, in both the boatyards and the shipyards case, the goals of the Clean Water Act are being approached. Discharge elimination system, where they are now treating, discharging the sanitary sewer, and even in the case of some of the boatyards, like Nielsen Beaumont, designing the boatyard so it is a concave depression so that it holds the stormwater, even the ones that they can't capture in their tanks. So we're following the model we use with the boatyards in consolidating the permits in this general order that's proposed for the board to consider in May.
I guess I should have known that. Thank you.
A good question. Thank you. I see Andrew Meyer's hand up. Can you ask your question or comment, Andrew Meyer?
Yes, hello. Thank you, Chair Cantu. This is Andrew Meyer from San Diego Audubon Society. Can you hear me?
We can. Go ahead.
Sorry. Thanks very much to all the technical side of things from the Water Board for this useful meeting. Admit lots of ignorance about the NPDES program and what the regional board is already doing in this sphere. But to add on to Philip's question from Coastkeeper, I would just love to know if there's any, what exists currently, and if there's any hope to improve the impact to, or our understanding of the impact to wildlife from the stormwater effluent and the kinds of, whether it be PFAS or other kinds of chemicals that are related to this kind of San Diego Bay use. Is there any way that we understand these chemicals or nutrients effect on organisms currently? And is there any way that we could add or improve, deepen our understanding of its impact, not only just by monitoring the water, but also by then monitoring, getting some information about how it might be bioaccumulating or building up in some of the eelgrass or some of the invertebrates or some of the birds, for instance, that are using and interacting with these kinds of water quality effluent locations in our bay. I'd love to know more about that. And if there's any general information or coming improvements to that side of things, I'd love to hear it. Thanks very much.
Thank you. I think Gabe Gibson would like to respond.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew, and thank you, Philip, too, for your comments as well. Those are excellent questions, and they're large questions. I think the best way to try to get our arms around it are two things. First, the board adopted a monitoring framework resolution in 2012, 2013, which requires posing four different levels of questions, including identification of conditions, stressors, sources of stressors, and the effectiveness of control measures. That's a very global approach we're requiring now in all of our NPDES permits and other monitoring requirements. And for San Diego Bay, the board adopted a resolution endorsing a strategy for a healthy San Diego Bay, which poses those questions and uses a process to evaluate conditions in the bay for wildlife as well as for water chemistry. And among the key beneficial uses the board identified for the bay are the ecological condition of the bay, as well as the ability of the public to enjoy it for swimming and for fish and shellfish consumption. So those documents guide the board's many disparate efforts on improving the conditions in the bay. The bay is now better than it's been any time since the Clean Water Act was adopted in terms of any of the metrics we choose to use to evaluate health of the bay, water chemistry, bioaccumulation, ecological condition. But we still have more to go, especially for site cleanup program type cases. So I refer you to those several documents that my staff and I are available to follow up offline in the interest of just keeping us focused on this current matter before the boards, but we have several efforts in that. And then I guess the final thing to mention is the Port of San Diego leads the Regional Harbors Monitoring Effort, required by the board through investigative order more than 15 years ago, probably closer to 20. And that integrates a lot of information from several locations throughout the bay, not just the best sites and not just the worst sites. It tries to be an accurate gauge of conditions in the bay using tools like sediment water quality objectives and triad approach. So your questions are really quite relevant. The shipyards are significant dischargers to the bay or potential discharges to the bay. And we've tried to structure both the requirements and the monitoring that we engage to answer and ask and answer those questions I mentioned with regard to the monitoring framework. So that's really what we're here for today, though, is also to hear from the public their concerns and to reiterate the importance of carrying forward the strategy and that monitoring framework approach.
Does that answer your question, Andrew Meyer?
Yeah, thank you very much, Dave. That was awesome. Obviously, San Diego Bay is critical habitat for rafts of brants and surf scoters all year long. And I just want to emphasize that improvement to the habitat, as you mentioned, Dave, it's been improving a lot. There's a long way to go to make it the habitat that those species are used to and have evolved with for thousands and thousands of years. So thanks. Happy to follow up with those reports that you mentioned. Thanks.
Thank you. And as I've often mentioned to my staff, we also want to make it a safe place for Pacific gray whales to enjoy. It was once their habitat. So we look at the continuity, the entire continuum of conditions in the bay. But yes, for fish and wildlife and for birds, among the things that we've investigated are our eggshell concentrations of bioaccumulative pollutants. Can we measure them in those organisms? We work very closely with the Southern California Coastal Water Research Project, SCWRP, which in its monitoring effort for BITE 23, about to begin, includes San Diego Bay and includes some of these outcome measures that we're concerned about. So be glad to help follow up with you as we go forward.
Thank you. I see Philip Musigas' hand is up.
Yes, Madam Chair. I just thank you again. I had a quick question for you all. I'm just wondering, I know you mentioned we have, I think, three of the permittees that would seek coverage under this general permit in the short term, and then Austal sounds like they would be seeking coverage. Do you have a sense how many additional facilities that are operating in the bay would also might fall under this permit in the future? Is that too hard to answer? Just trying to get a sense of how large an area this permit would cover.
Ms. Fawn, is that something you would like to answer?
I don't foresee any additional shipyards other than these four. Shipyards are large infrastructures that do take a lot of planning and resources. So I feel like we would know the construction of one years before they even have the chance to enroll under this permit.
Okay, so that makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll invite board members at this point for any additional questions or comments. And any questions or comments from the permittees?
Just want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Appreciate you helping us get the word out.
I appreciate all the shipyards for coming today to answer questions. I don't think we could have done this without you guys.
And thank you guys for giving us a voice. And you know, I just want to say, like, just following up on Philip's question, I know that just looking at sea life in the bay isn't necessarily an indicator of their health, but you know, we observe a lot of wildlife around our yard, and it always makes us really happy to see that our environment here is clean enough for them to thrive. So I think that's important.
Thank you. And I see a hand up again from Phil. Is that from your previous question or is this a new question?
I think that is from my previous question. I apologize. I would just say thank you to the permittees also for the presentations. They're very helpful. And thank you, Madam Chair. I will lower my hand.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Dr. Olson.
Yes, I'd just like to thank everyone for coming today, particularly those that presented. I know you really helped me understand what we're going to be looking at, and I just want to reiterate, I think you gave great presentations, and thank you so much. And thanks to Ms. Fan, who also did a great job today. Thank you.
Great. Well, this is a workshop, so we don't need to close a hearing or anything formally. We'll continue to take comments until April 7th. Is that right? I'm going on memory now.
Yes. Let me see if I could put the order and the public notice in the chat for everyone's reference.
That'd be great. Thank you very much. And let me join Vice Chair Dr. Olson in thanking everybody for participating today. It's much more carbon efficient to do this on Zoom. Nobody was caught driving, which we thought would have been a rainy day. Our rainy days may be close to being over. We don't know, but we've really enjoyed a tremendous number of storms this year put this permit and all of your stormwater management skills to task, undoubtedly. And thank you, Ms. Fawn, for putting in the chat the notice. And so anybody who has any questions, please click on that and you can keep that open and that'll tell you what our next steps are. Let me see. I think I have some more comments in here. I don't want to see if there are anything new. Okay. Thank you very much. This will be the end of our workshop.